Is mic on?
Episode 67, What's Wrong with Orny Adams? Part two of the doozy. Part two of the doozy. My interview with guest Jim Clemente, former FBI profiler, former prosecutor, writer and producer on Criminal Minds, and host of the wildly popular podcast Real Crime Profile, which is on Wondery. On this episode 67, you're going to love this. Jim gives his professional former FBI profiler opinion on why Teen Wolf fans are fascinated with one character that they've never met. What is that, Jim? We will discuss. Also, Jim discusses the mind of a sexual predator and specifically the person that abused him. And wait till you hear how he confronted his abuser years later. Also, you might not want to ask Jim to profile you. Like if you're at a party and you see Jim, maybe you've had a few drinks, don't be cocky and say, hey, Jim, why don't you profile me? Because if you're a criminal, he might see right through you. And that's what happened to this one guy at a party. And Jim tells a story. Also, do you know the ironic story about Ernesto Miranda? No, not Ernesto Hurtado, the guy who produces his podcast. Ernesto Miranda, the guy who spurred the Supreme Court case on having your rights read. Right? You're arrested. The police have to tell you you have the right to remain silent. They have to tell you that you have the right to an attorney. Well, first of all, we're going to get Jim's opinion on these rights. Also, the story. I was curious if he knew the story about Miranda and how he was killed years later and what happened to his killer. It's a really interesting story. Now, I want to thank you, the listeners, because without you, I'm just a crazy person talking in a 1963 Shasta trailer in my backyard. So I want to thank you for the people that are enthusiastic, that subscribe to my Patreon because I want to see the video fresh right off the press, hot and delicious, and consume it and eat it all up. And I want to thank the people that are patient. I'm not patient, but some people are patient and they can wait a few weeks and see it on YouTube. I want to thank the people that listen and that share it and subscribe and write reviews. All this stuff really helps me in this stupid algorithm that I'm dealing with in my life all of a sudden. So thank you. Thank you. Now, before we get into this interview, I have to tell you, and I didn't tell Jim this, but when we were recording this episode, which went on for a long time, it was we talked a little bit before, and if you're a subscriber to my Patreon, you can see some of that discussion, which isn't part of the podcast. We went on so long that the SD card failed, and the last 19 minutes of the audio didn't record on the board, but it did get picked up by the cameras. Ernesto's doing his best to make this sound decent, so I'm asking you. I think the content is so interesting that just stick with it. It's only 19 minutes of your life. You can suffer through 19 minutes with crappy audio. I know you can, because it's important that you hear what Jim has to say. It was during this 19 minutes, we were discussing his molestation or when he was abused. And I asked him why victims don't come forward more, because it annoys me when people get angry with victims for not coming forward. And that's part of this 19 minutes. So please bear with it. You know what? Here's how you need to think of it. It sounds almost like an FBI recording. It almost sounds like I wired up and I'm talking to Jim and you're listening to some crappy police recording. So think of it that way. You will love this episode. I promise you. I promise you. So now I present to you with great joy part two of my interrogation of former FBI profiler Jim Clemente. It starts now. Now, you should know, I did advise Jim. He had the right to remain silent. He chose not to. He chose to speak and open up and spill his guts as a guest right here on What's Wrong with Orny Adams. Episode 67 starts now. I have a question for an actual FBI profiler about a character on the show, Teen Wolf.
Okay, great. Let's see if the writers wrote right.
I have 6 seasons, 100 episodes. We just shot a movie. Wow. I'm fired up. I saw the movie, parts of the movie yesterday, and people are asking me, is the movie good? This is all I can tell you and why I'm excited. I look good. I was so worried that like I'd look chubby on camera. My face will look tired. And I even met with the colorist afterwards. I said, who's color correcting this? There's some stuff under my eye. I slipped the guy a couple of bucks. You know what I mean? Smart. I know how to roll.
All right.
Yeah.
So do you want to tell me about your role?
Yeah, I was there. I play Coach Finstock.
Okay.
And I'm this guy who's completely, to me, it's like a Mr. Magoo character that is just unaware, blissfully, doesn't know about all these killings, has probably been in this town for hundreds of years and just doesn't care. Mm-hmm. Let the kids do their, I'm here to get a paycheck. I'm here to win the Beacon Hills lacrosse tournament.
Play bingo on the weekend.
Yeah, whatever it is. I have a whole backstory in my head of who this guy is. But there is a character on the show that they've never met named Greenberg. Okay. I'm always yelling at this guy, Greenberg, shut it, Greenberg, you know, or if anybody here has any problems this weekend, you call me on my cell phone, except for you, Greenberg. You know, there's a lot of, right? You never.
Well, that's great. Yeah. Yes. I had a character like that in one in a show that I pitched called Special Agents.
Huh.
Because it was a comedy about the FBI, kind of the inner workings of the FBI, the behind the scenes goofy stuff that goes on. But anyway.
Yeah. So there is Greenberg. Such fascination with this character, Greenberg. And
he's obviously a fuck up, right?
Well, yeah, profile him for me. Let me hear what you think. Well, because clearly. I'll tell you, here's the deal. Never met Greenberg. They've never seen his face. They don't know anything beyond. I get a holiday card every year from Greenberg. Greenberg might be just a figment of my imagination. Maybe I planted the card. Maybe Greenberg is me. More than likely, Greenberg is probably Jeff Davis, who created the show. And I'm really just yelling at him. Yeah.
The same one who created Criminal Minds?
That's how we're connected.
That's the same guy?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I met Jeff Davis before he created the show because he came to my office to learn about profiling.
You made him a lot of money. Yeah.
Him and a lot of other people, let me tell you.
Not me.
Ugh,
not me.
Good Lord.
I've done all right. But yes, Jeff Davis, who created Criminal Minds and Teen Wolf, two major shows. Jeff Davis saw my name. I was in a documentary. I hate talking about it. Jeff Davis saw my name on a marquee at the Improv, was driving by and said, I don't know if that guy's even funny. I'm going to stop in and see. He then would come to all my shows anytime I was in town.
Smart
and he
guy.
Wrote the part for me.
Wow.
And he said, I feel like I was slighted. You know, I'm sure he's open about the story. Maybe he'll come here and talk about it. But he was sort of pushed out of Criminal Minds at some point.
But he still made money.
Yeah, right? But you know what? I'm going to tell you something.
Oh.
It's not always about money.
Oh, it isn't.
No, it's about humility. It's about not being embarrassed. And I feel like Jeff felt a camaraderie or sense of, like he understood, he just related to me because he felt like I was wronged in this documentary.
Okay.
And he said, I'm going to make it right. Well, you know, Jeff, I'm kind of waiting. You know, where's the spinoff? We've talked about this spinoff forever. So Greenberg,
what's up with him?
Okay, here's the thing. It's fascinating. These stupid Teen Wolf fans, I think they think he's real.
Oh, really?
I think there's discussions. I pulled this off the internet last week.
What are they saying?
Okay. Let me start by saying this. When I'm in the airport, when I'm in public, people will come up to me and they'll say, oh my God, they flip out. There's excitement. Mm-hmm. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
Big deal to see me.
Famous.
Touched a famous person. Jim Clemente just touched a famous person. They're excited. Okay.
I can't imagine why they wouldn't.
Then they say, why do you hate Greenberg so much? It's as if they can't differentiate me from the character. They believe I am Coach Finstock. Why is that?
First of all, it's a great thing, right? Because they're blending you. They're blending reality in that show. So they're suspending disbelief, right? Mm-hmm. When they're watching the show, you become that person, right? It happened with everybody on Criminal Minds as well, you know, where you know, people have a persona.
Yeah.
They get approached or they get attacked because of what they do, right, on the show. It's a phenomenon that people feel closer to you. You're Hollywood, right? You're Hollywood.
I'm not. I'm the most un-Hollywood person you'll ever meet.
Dude, I don't want to give away your exact location, but I can look out the window here and see the Hollywood sign. It's only about 15 feet away, so don't tell me you're not Hollywood.
Who's the only house available? I've been looking for years.
Okay, yeah. But the point is, you represent Hollywood to them, right? You're an actor, right? You're somebody famous, and they think they know you because right. They're relating to your character. Mm-hmm. That means you did a good job creating this character.
Right.
Otherwise, you know, if you were just some asshole, they'd be like, fuck him, I don't care.
Do they really not? I mean, like, they don't come up and say, hey, Arnie, I love your character. I love the show. Who's this Greenberg, and why does the coach hate Greenberg so much? That, to me, would be the rational brain. These sociopaths that watch Teen Wolf, these disenfranchised kids, think I'm actually coach. To the point, let me tell you something, kids. Now I'm talking straight into the camera. They anger me. I'm fired up, Jim. These stupid Teen Wolf fans see me only as coach, to the point they won't even come to see my stand-up because that takes them out of Beacon Hills. Let it go. We're going to do 3 movies. There's 2 more coming after this, and that's it. Then you become fans of my stand-up comedy. Tired of it. All of you. Talking to you. You and you. I'm talking to all of you. Listen to me. Enough of this crap. Why can't they say?
How much longer is this going on?
Oh, we just started. We haven't even gotten into your story. What's wrong with Jim Clemente?
Oh, my God.
Why?
Why did I agree to do this? That's the real question.
Are you not having a good time?
I'm having a great time. I feel bad. This is amazing. No.
So listen to this. This is on the internet. Ready? Catherine tweets, I'm currently binging Teen Wolf in preparation for the new movie. And I think that's good. I like people that prepare.
Sure.
I'm on season 4, but I was wondering, in the movie, is Greenberg going to be finally revealed? I need to know why Coach makes so much fun of him. Okay, I'm fine now. She understands that it's in the movie.
Yeah, Coach.
Larissa writes back. Same, but at the same time, I really hope we never get to give Greenberg a face because that would kind of ruin the joke. What do you think, Arnie Adams? I should have responded to that because that's a good question. I agree with that.
It's like Bruce Willis and what's her name kissing at the end of Moonlighting. I mean, you know, you don't
want
to see it.
You don't want them to ever get together.
Right, because you always wanted them to get together, and if they got together, it was going to let you down.
And that's what I'm trying to tell you, Teen Wolf fans and people in the world, and why Dateline is great for 48 minutes, but the last 12 sucks. Because once you find out who murdered, and it's always the husband or wife, or the person that they're having the affair with, it's not good anymore. Greenberg is great because you don't know.
The mystery.
The mystery.
It's the mystery.
Right, right.
It engages your imagination.
What if we told them who Greenberg was? Who this is what I don't get. People are so intrigued and fascinated by things that if they knew the answer to it, it would be such a disappointment.
Right, well, that's why a lot of people don't want to meet, I think you might have said this, don't want to meet their heroes.
Never.
Right? You don't want to meet them. It's just going to be a letdown. Although, I will say, Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, I thought you were going to say meeting me today. No. I really did.
Your insecurity.
I really did. Oh, my insecurity. Yeah, no. Okay.
Anthony Hopkins.
I met him.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, his eyes, they're like gray.
Yeah.
Gray, light blue. He was just so entrancing, you know?
Did you meet him when they were working on Silence of the Lambs?
No. 15 years, 20 years later, whatever. But I told him. The way I met him, it was kind of weird because a friend of mine asked me to do a edit on a script for him.
Oh.
And whoever wrote it didn't know the difference between civil law and criminal law. They had a law firm going to be the prosecutor. They just were all fucked up. So I found a scene, though, where there were 3 people, right? And each person had a secret from the other 2. Right. Or each 2 had a secret from the other, from the 3rd one.
Right.
So I was like so I rewrote it so that every question he asked to him was actually showing him something, you know, was like proving something to him. And it did that. It was sort of a cool thing. Right. Yeah. So I did it. I sent it back to the guy and he said, oh, man, the actors loved it. And he said, you know, they want you to be there on set consultant. And I was like, great. He said, it's Al Pacino and Anthony Hopkins and Josh Duhamel.
What film was this?
It was called Misbehavior.
Okay.
It was a small independent film, but they were. It was the first time Hopkins and Pacino were together. So I got there and like, you know, I mean, I'm like blown away. Like Pacino, always an all-time favorite, has your hairstyle.
Hoo-ha!
But he's losing, you know, he's losing it. He's just not as sharp, right, as he used to be. Hopkins walks in, introduces himself to each person, memorizes all their names, the entire rest of the shoot. He could call them by name. Wow. It was so personable. It was amazing. I mean, not, you know, Pacino got into his character and never got out of it and, you know, and did his thing, you know, and he was very professional. But, you know, the difference, that was pretty amazing. But then at a break, right, I went up to him and I said, I just want to thank you because you inspired me to become an FBI profiler. He goes, you're the one that wrote the scene? Oh, my God. And he said, would you sit down and talk to me?
Oh, that's cool.
And I'm like, are you talking to me?
Yeah.
And it was the greatest thing because I asked him, I said, where did you find Hannibal Lecter in your brain? Like, how did you do it? He's like, my wife asked me the same thing. I said, I don't blame
she's
her.
She's worried. Yeah. I said, she's worried. Yeah.
I said, but you were amazing and all the profilers love you. And obviously you.
Yeah,
you
that's a profiler's wet dream.
Oh
that
my
movie.
God, that movie is. Yeah. So it's so great. So
I'm sure like enrollment went up.
Yeah, it did.
In that whole
just
thing.
Like, X-Files, you know, you talk about people not being able to separate. People have actually asked me, so what's it like working with aliens now that you're an FBI agent? And I said, well, you mean like
illegal
people
aliens?
Cross the border? Yeah. You know, what are you talking about? Like, no, we don't have X-Files. You know, really, they really thought there were, come on, I know you're not allowed to talk about it, but you know, you work in Area 51, right? Yeah, right.
Have you been there, Area 51?
Would I be able to tell you if I
don't know.
Oh,
yeah, tell
not.
Me.
You have to get on one of those planes without the tail numbers in Vegas.
Well,
come
we
on.
Do that. I've done that.
Look have at this. You?
Further evidence about Greenberg. Now read this. This is how it gets a little creepy here.
Okay.
Read that. I'll react
this
on
one?
Camera. Yeah, read what this says right here. Just how serious this Teen Wolf fandom takes this Greenberg thing.
Yeah, true. I seen online, though, that Greenberg may have already gotten revealed. In season one, Coach asked a question, and three boys put their hands, including Greenberg. Coach tells Greenberg to put down his hand, and the kid in this pic puts down his hand.
Okay.
Do you want me to keep going?
Is there more?
Coach asks the question. It says it again. Yeah, we finally know who Greenberg is.
No, you don't see the whole classroom, and we wouldn't reveal it. You know, I'm just saying they take it too seriously. Well, and I think it's fascinating, the human mind. Yeah. Listen, love these fans. They're the greatest in the world. But I think it's fascinating that they're so curious about something that if they knew the answer to it, it would be nothing but a letdown.
It keeps them coming back every week, every year. It's amazing. People are very loyal. I mean, what about, you know, what is the Succession, right? You know, you could say, you know, you could say the name of one of the characters and everybody melts, right? Yeah. Because they're like, oh my God, you know, Civ, you know, is that her name? Civ?
I don't know.
Civ.
I don't know.
I think so.
I don't know. Who killed JonBenet Ramsey? Who killed JonBenet Ramsey?
I'm not allowed to talk about it because of lawsuits.
Is that true?
It's absolutely true. It's absolutely true.
Oh my, I really want to know.
I was sued for $980 million.
That's almost a billion. It's
I know.
20 million shy.
I was like, couldn't you come up with another 20 million?
For what? For that podcast I saw you talking about it on?
No, a TV show.
Were you confronted the father?
Oh, yeah.
I saw that one. Yeah, I saw that one. Yeah. You never really answered it.
No, did he?
You didn't get to follow up or anything like that?
But, you know. I took it easy.
It was a good question. I'll say, you don't say anything, but, you know, it is, you brought up some points that I hadn't thought about, certainly for years, that, you know, who kills somebody and then writes this whole note on the paper that was in the house. I mean, the whole thing. But I need to know who.
It's kind of funny how it's never happened before or since.
That's ever. What I love too. That you.
It's a singular event in the history
don't
of man.
Get yourself sued.
I'm just.
What happened? Did you settle that case for like what, half a billion?
They dismissed the case.
You were on a TV show and you said something, and then you get sued for that.
Yeah, that's.
But how do they come up with $1 billion? You don't.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Do you? With what certainty do you believe you know who killed JonBenet Ramsey?
just as sure as I know, this table's here and you're sitting in front of me.
Okay, so you believe you know who killed. Yes. Do you know
what the... It's a very small pool.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But you know the person. Not it. Don't get yourself drunk. You believe you know the person.
I believe
person.
I know the person.
Okay. And do you believe you know the motive?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
Can you say what that is?
No.
Who killed Madeline McCann?
Well, I'll tell you this. I wasn't on the ground. I didn't travel out there to work the case, but two of my colleagues did. And I really respect them and I believe them. They were firmly convinced that the father and mother would not have been capable of killing her and then doing what they did, acting in public and so forth. There is there has been some indication of somebody from Europe who apparently was visiting there at the time, who may have had sexual attraction to little girls and may very well have taken her. Oh. It's a bizarre case, but what happens when you don't thoroughly investigate immediately, do concentric circle searches around the last known sighting area, when you don't clear that area immediately, you start losing very valuable evidence.
This took place, I think, in 2003 in Portugal. Would the Portugal authorities, police, have the capabilities? How good are overseas equivalents to our FBI?
Well, I don't think the FBI got involved, and I think they made up their minds pretty quickly and did not do... We put out, in the behavioral analysis unit where I worked, we put out a child abduction rapid deployment plan. And we had rapid deployment teams around the country. So we knew how to respond. You know, we could get to any location in the United States within 2 hours. You know, we had people. Mm. And that's, you know, and then we gave out, you know, hundreds of thousands of copies of these child abduction response plans for law enforcement, you know, translated to many languages. I don't know if it was in Portugal. It's really critically important, things you do immediately, things you do in the first hour, 6 hours, 24 hours and stuff. And, you know, based on statistics on what happens in these cases, they're pretty grim. So I just think that they were not prepared for it.
Right.
And then they treated it like it was, you know, sort of a foreign problem, right, as opposed to like really intrinsic to their country. I don't think,
which is interesting because a lot of their money comes from tourism. You'd think you'd want to solve that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the same thing happened with, Natalie Holloway.
Right.
You
know? Aruba. Another one. They solved that, didn't they? It was like some authority's son or something. I think that one.
Yeah. He killed another girl on the anniversary.
Yeah. Well, why not? I mean, these people.
Well, his Bernbendis. Jorn Vandersloot.
His
father was a judge.
Right.
And I could not believe how they just
yeah,
let him slide.
Interesting.
It was a very, very clear case of, you know, favoritism. Mm. And then 5 years later, he killed a very famous race car driver's daughter.
That's right.
On the anniversary.
Wow.
And you know what he did?
What?
Immediately. He's a psychopath. He immediately recovered. He walks out of the room carrying two empty coffee cups, goes down, gets them filled up, and comes back in and discovers her missing. He bought two empty cups because he was already trying to prove that he was coming back to give her something to drink. Well, what he didn't realize is there's a camera right outside his door and nobody came in or out.
Oh, wow.
Nobody. And so it was pretty simple.
Could have come in the window. Are you the only one in the Idaho murders that believes that somebody came in through the second floor?
No, I think other people.
The other people. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. So
because if they came in through the first floor, they probably would have killed the people on the ground.
Right.
Right.
Interesting.
They didn't get to them at all.
Jim Clemente, my guest, is a former FBI profiler, really? Former New York State prosecutor. We didn't even talk about that.
New York City prosecutor.
New York City prosecutor.
Yeah, somebody says state. I don't know. That's wrong.
Oh, boy. How did you get into the FBI? It's a really interesting story.
Crazy story, yeah.
That involves
my life.
You're a victim.
Yeah. Well, I was, anyway. So I was prosecuting cases in the Bronx in New York City. And my brother called me, my older brother, and he said, hey, you know, now that you're a prosecutor, we should go after the director of the camp when we were there, when we were kids. And I was like, why? And he said, well, one time when nobody else was around, I snuck into his office and I found 3 paper bags filled with Polaroid pictures of him molesting boys. And I said, I thought I was the only one. And the next day I went to the FBI NYPD Task Force on Sexual Exploitation of Children, told them my story. I was shaking like yeah. I was a little kid again, you know, and they opened an investigation and, you know, they tracked him to 13 different Catholic schools and camps in 23 years.
This is a religious camp?
Yeah.
Did your brother know that you were a victim?
No, he didn't. But what happened? No, he didn't. But what happened was after the next day, he was walking through the office and the guy pulls his .30-06 out, points it at him, and pulls the trigger. And he said, it would be that easy and they'd never find your body. So clearly he knew. He had
a priest or a father?
He was kicked out of the priesthood, but he was still running the camp.
And was he kicked out because of sex
crime? Well, they said sexual activity. That's why he was kicked out.
Was he just taking pictures of little boys or was he acting upon?
No, he was sexually victimizing boys. A lot of boys. Anyway, so I ended up, they wanted me to meet him and wear a wire.
How old are you at this point?
At this point, I'm just out of law school, probably 24, 25.
Where'd you go to law school?
Went to Fordham.
Okay.
Bronx. No, well, the undergrad's in the Bronx, the law school's in Manhattan at Lincoln Center. Okay. So anyway, I lived very close to there and I refused to meet him. I was like, no, I've had dreams about meeting him, but it's usually in an alley and I have a machine gun or a machete. You know, there's not calm conversation. I just don't think I can do it. So I'm calm about it now, but I was telling him no fucking way. Right. So anyway, going about my life, I'm now 18 months out of law school. And because I work for the city, you don't have to file your application to the bar. You have 18 months to do it. You get to try cases right away because they need prosecutors.
Wow.
So they give you a bye. But you have 18 months and you have to file your papers because the prosecutor's office does a deep background on you. So it's exactly the same as the bar. So they let you do it. But I never find my paperwork. My boss comes in. She's like, if you don't get this filed by the end of the week, you're out of a job. And I was like, oh, I forgot about it. I didn't forget about it. I didn't want to put... You have to write down every place you ever lived in your life. And I didn't want to put the camp down. I didn't want them to know where I was. I figured they would, you know.
Why?
They would interview him and he would know. And I was still...
for being the bar for prosecutor? For FBI?
The background investigation lists every place you ever lived. That's part of what you have to do.
For being a prosecutor?
Yes. Right.
Okay.
And for getting admitted to the bar. You have to have your entire life. Yes.
Every lawyer.
So I didn't want to do it. And that's why I didn't. And then I said, what the fuck? I'm an adult now.
Right.
Why am I so obsessed? Why am I worrying about this guy? He doesn't even know me anymore. Don't worry about it. I called in sick the next day just so I could fill out. It's 25 pages. And then you're supposed to send it to your law school. They attach your transcripts and then they send it off to the bar. So I live 7 blocks from my law school. So I just walked in at, you know, maybe 4:30, you know, in the afternoon after spending all day doing it. I walk in and who the fuck do you think is sitting at the desk as the night assistant to the fucking dean of Fordham Law School? Michael J. O'Hara, the guy who molested me.
Come on, what's he doing there?
He just got fired from another grade school, and he got a job at the law school. I was like, I thought I was walking into the fucking Twilight Zone. I mean, I literally could not believe it.
You walked in.
Walked in, and he's sitting there, and I'm like, no. I just convinced myself last night that this guy, I'd never see this guy.
This guy's looking to get caught.
He's sitting right at the next to the alumni files. He said first words out of his mouth. Yeah, I noticed you graduated here a couple of years ago. So now I'm like, part of me
incentivized
wants to dive over the desk and choke him to death. And then thinking, in my law school, probably not a good idea, right? So the dean fortunately walks in, and I just hand it to her, my application. Now, I'm supposed to hand it to him, but I hand it to her. I walk into her office, and I want to write a note saying he's a motherfucking pedophile. Anyway, so I walk back out. He says, oh, yeah, I'm sorry to hear about your mom's death.
And this guy's a creep.
That did it for me.
Yeah. He's stalking you?
Yes, of course
stalking
he was.
Stalking his victims?
Yes.
Because there's a lot of victims, right?
Yes, yes. So
is this part of his fantasy?
It is.
To still control you as an adult. Am
there
I right?
You go. Yes. So, or still fantasize about me when I was a kid.
So
I walk out. I pick up the phone. I call the FBI. I said, you know how you wanted me to wire up and meet him? I know where he is right now. Wire me up.
Wow.
They come, they wire me up. I go back in, they set it all up. They have, you know, they tell me what I should say to him. We meet. We ended up having to meet six times. He told me all this stuff, but it was all beyond the statute of limitations. Finally, I met him at his house, and I saw a picture of a kid, let's say, playing baseball, and he had a certain number on his jersey. And so I remembered that, and I thought, that's probably another victim. So I told them, I told the agents and the cops, it was NYPD and FBI, and they were able to identify this kid, and then they ended up arresting him. But in between, that night, I'm in my apartment building. It's, you know, like midnight. I look out my window, and he's sitting across the street from my apartment, looking up at my apartment, drinking a bottle of booze.
He's looking to get killed.
No, well, he's looking to fantasize about me. My reaction at the time, obviously, was not good. I mean, I was freaking out. I was like, this is what I didn't want. He knows where I live. Fuck. So that was a really terrible time in my life. But I did it. I made all these tapes. I transcribed them all. Gave all that information to the FBI. They prosecuted him. He went to jail for a short period of time. But at the end, the FBI agent slid over a bunch of papers. I said, what's this? And he said, it's an application to the FBI.
Wow.
And I said, you take me even though I was a victim? And he's like, fuck.
Why wouldn't they?
You went undercover. You did all this work for us. Fuck yeah. And so that, yeah, but when you're in the victim frame of mind, you don't think that.
That's what I want to ask.
That's the day I became a survivor, right? That's the day everything turned around. So I go through the FBI Academy. Guess what? They put me on the same squad when I come out of the academy. The
child abuse or sexual abuse.
Yeah, sexual victimization of children in New York. So I'm now investigating with the people who just investigated my case. It totally turned everything around. Now I'm an expert in the field.
And how did they treat you?
They treated me fine.
Yeah.
They treated me great.
So because you were molested, this led to you being in the FBI.
Yes.
And
I was able to lock up a bunch of people who molested kids.
So there's a lot of people in jail because you were molested. That's where my mind goes. It's horrible. I agree. But that's where my mind goes.
Well, it's turning lemons into lemonade. That's what it is. It's taking something negative. And this is something, I don't know if you've seen the show on Stutz, I think it's called.
What is that, another network I'm not on?
No. It's not on Stutz. Oh. It's on Netflix.
Oh.
And it's an actor and his therapist. And I think his therapist's name is Stutz.
Okay.
You got to see this. It's great. It'll help you. There's two things that I took away from that. One is, he said when he was a kid, he was like 8 years old, and he was actually getting on a plane.
Yeah.
And this is a big thing. You know, you don't just fly like we do now. And he said, but it's cloudy out, and they're going through it, and they're flying in clouds, and he's crying. And his father's like, don't worry. We're going to break through the clouds. It's sunny up there. And the kid's like, you think I'm stupid? There's no freaking way that it's sunny up there. Yeah. You're insane. You know, you're just trying to make me feel better. You're lying to me. And they broke through the clouds. And it's sunny. And he realized for the first time in his life that his experience is not everything.
Right.
That the way you're looking at it is just your blinders. If you can break through that cloud, the sun is shining.
Yeah.
So when bad things happen, you got to think. You got to find the clouds and break through them, right? That's the first thing. The other thing he said was, if you look at a string of pearls, every single one of those pearls started with a frigging grain of sand or dirt in an oyster. It was a problem, an ugly thing. It turned into pearls.
But these are beautiful metaphors and euphemisms to make you feel good for a moment.
But what I'm trying to say is, no, it's how it's they're both meant to change the way you think about the horrible things that happen. The horrible things will happen. Make a fucking pearl out of it.
Yeah, but
break through the cloud and realize the sun's still
nobody,
shining.
Nobody, not every victim can go undercover with the FBI and get justice. So you broke through that cloud like
In 2010, I had a massive heart attack.
What?
I had a heart attack, a Widowmaker heart attack. I was playing tennis with my brother and his son.
Jim, don't die in my house right now.
Not right now.
Cancer, you had a heart attack, you're barely hanging on, and I don't need you to take down my property value. Listen, you die right now, I'm throwing you on the other side of the fence.
I get it. You know, just put me on the other side of that wall.
Shutting all the security cameras off. Why were they off for 15 minutes as I dragged your
corpse? Dude, I had this heart attack, right? And, you know, 4 days later, they release me. I go to my doctor, he says, dude, there's no friggin' even indication that you had a heart attack. I flatlined 3 times. I had cardiac arrest. A heart attack is just when you lose blood to your heart.
What were you doing at the time?
Playing tennis. Okay. But backing up, I got released from the hospital. I went right back to the ER and I bought 10 pizzas and I had a pizza party for the nurses and I took the doctor to lunch. I'm sitting there with the doctor and he tells me, it's pretty amazing sitting here talking to you. And I said, yeah, I feel the same way. You saved my life. He goes, you don't understand. I could have called you dead at 28 minutes.
Wow.
I said, what the fuck are you talking about? He said, well, if we can't get you back into rhythm in 28 minutes, I can say I pronounce him dead at this time.
Right.
And I said, well, why didn't you? And he goes, well, you fought me so much at the beginning that I knew you were strong. So I figured I should keep working on you. And I said, why was I fighting you? And he goes, well, when I was trying to intubate you. And I said, oh. When I had cancer, I had a lymphoma and one of my lymph nodes grew to the size of a baseball and it kind of crushed my trachea. So it looks like this. So if you were trying to intubate me with an adult tube, you were cutting into my trachea. That's why I was fighting you. Yeah. And he said, then cancer saved your life.
Wow.
So that's what I'm talking about. Even fucking cancer and fuck cancer, even fucking cancer actually ended up saving my life in the end.
Wow.
So even if you're going through the worst motherfucking thing you could ever think of, it could, in the end, be something. If it doesn't kill you, it could be something good for you.
Well, I mean, it's not easy to break through those clouds, but you did
it. But you got to try it.
Yeah.
You got to try it. If you try it, it makes all the difference in the world. I'm not saying that it's simple. Anxiety, depression, those are hard things. But I've been through them, and yet I love life. I really appreciate it. I know what it's like on the other side, man. They keep trying, but they haven't gotten me yet.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Well, you know.
Can I get back to this story?
Story?
What did you get this guy to open up about? Why would this former priest or father, camp counselor, why would he, knowing you're in law school, knowing that you're graduating, you're about to take the bar as a prosecutor, why would he even talk to you?
And this is where the FBI profilers came in. They coached me, you know, well, through the agent there, they coached me on exactly what to say. They studied pedophiles. These guys know from the time they're in their adolescence, generally, that they're different, that what their attraction to children is wrong. So they hide, right? They have to hide it. They still want to get access to kids. But when they do find somebody who's like-minded, they cling to that person. They're like, it's like we have a group here. There's a group called NAMBLA, North American Man Boy Love Association.
That's awesome.
Yeah, there's several of them, you know, that have, you know, they have sex by eight or it's too late mottos like that. It's horrible shit.
That makes me want to throw up.
It does make me want to throw up.
I had a visceral, bodily reaction.
I've had to overcome that. So
let's grow up together right now.
I had to go. They asked me to go and sit with him and tell him, look, my reaction when I was a kid, I'm sorry about that. You know, like I was dumb. I was young. I was stupid. I didn't know. You were just trying to teach me about sex. I should have like thanked you. That's how I approached him about it. And he ate it up. He was like, oh, and I'll tell you this though. Halfway through the first meeting, you know, we're drinking beers and he says to me, I got to tell you something. I said, what? He goes, of all my boys, you were the last one I expected to come back to me. All my boys.
Piece of shit.
Yeah, exactly. And so inside, I'm saying, yeah, motherfucker, I am the last one that would have come back to you. But
why is he telling you? Why is he
admitting? Because he now thinks I'm a friendly. He now thinks I accept what happened. It was not bad. I really just learned from him. I'm just rephrasing what happened to me, reframing what happened to me. And he went with it. So he started bragging. He started bragging because he never gets a chance to talk about this shit.
Right.
And so he started talking about other kids at the camp. And then he went on and he started talking about other things. And eventually I got him to, you know, just totally relax with me about it and open up. He didn't tell me, but he was very careful about only talking about things that were way beyond the statute of limitations.
They always know the law. They always do. Can I quickly, so I can listen to your words with clarity. Was he attracted to you as an adult? Would a pedophile be attracted to one of their victims once they were out of the age range that they're normally attracted to?
Well, if he could still fantasize about that person as a child. So there's a whole spectrum of child sex offenders, okay? On one side of the spectrum is people who are pedophiles, right? And that's a very specific term. That means you're sexually attracted to prepubescent children, right? And on the other side, there's people who are sort of, we call them sexually diverse, right? They can be sexually attracted to anything. Trisexuals. They'll try sex with anything, okay. Right? They sex and experiencing sex in different forms is
like
very
sex
good
sex with
them.
Animals. Does that really go on?
Yeah.
Does it?
Okay. Yeah.
I mean,
I'm sure you could Google it. And
really?
Don't do that.
Yeah.
But the point is that they will try sex with anything. And if a child is available and they're horny, they'll take advantage of a child. So there's a whole spectrum in between. So there are some people who are sexually attracted to children and adults. There's some people who are attracted to teenage children. And in fact, the most prolific child sex offenders are male offenders who are attracted to adolescent teenage boys because they get easy access to boys. Men don't get really easy access to teenage women, right? Girls don't get that access. We don't let them go on sleepovers or take overnight fishing trips or go out to the cabin. You know, a 40-year-old man and a 15-year-old girl. It doesn't happen. Right. We protect the girls. We don't protect the boys from it because we think, oh, well, he's not gay. Well, it's not about gay. It's about being attracted to their childness, all right? Their immaturity, their naivete, their lack of experience sexually. Those things turn them on. So we played on that, you know, based on the coaching that the agents gave me. We played on that and talked to him. I talked to him about it. Like, I don't know what to do myself. I don't know, I didn't know at the time what you were trying to teach me and that sex is just sex. It's just, it's natural, you know, all these things. I played into that.
Did
and so he ate it.
Say maybe that you were considering acting upon being a pedophile?
I didn't say it, but he certainly took that. Like, he certainly let himself believe that.
Is there any fear for you saying these things which aren't true? You're not a pedophile, I believe.
No,
I've profiled you during this hour. I don't want to tell you. Jim Clemente.
No, yeah. It was disgusting for me. As soon
but
as they took my
But don't you fear
wire,
that that's on tape, even if it's not
yeah,
true?
Yeah, I mean, but I had to do it for work. I mean, but when they took the tape off of me, I immediately ran into the bathroom and threw up.
Yeah.
Like, I immediately, like, I was holding all that down, and I threw up. Because I did, first of all, I didn't want to sit next to him or across from him, and I pretended we were friends. But it went, you know, I had to meet him, like, six times.
How old is he at this time?
Oh, God, he's got to be, he's
70, 80?
No, he was in his 60s.
Did he go to jail?
Yeah, he went to jail.
Is
he
still alive?
No, he passed away after he got out of jail. But
do you have a sense of relief when he passes away? Is there?
Yeah, well, he's not doing it anymore, which is good. And also, crazy thing that happened was my boss from the prosecutor's office became the commissioner of probation. So he actually watched his case very closely and made sure he stayed away from kids. So he was like selling used cars or something, you know, and I think he drank himself to death. But the fact that the bad thing about it is that the Catholic Church, they would get an allegation, they would confront him, he would walk away. They'd never tell the next Catholic school.
Right, they send him, like, we're going to fire you, but we're not going to pass the folder upon.
We're going to let you walk away. We're not going to fire you. We're not going to investigate. Well, how are we going to do that?
I grew up in Boston, and you always heard these allegations from kids, and it was like a running joke, but it had to be true.
Yeah.
These kids must have been molested because everybody
knew the creepy teachers.
Yeah, we had one in my school. I'm not kidding. This guy. I don't even want to say his name because I don't want a $1 billion lawsuit. But there was a guy we knew. You couldn't do anything about it, but we knew at minimum his relationship with the female high school students was inappropriate.
Right.
It was over the line.
I had a guy in my high school, who married one of my classmates the year after we graduated.
That woman did that with that student.
Yeah, I know.
Now he's like,
she started having sex with him when he was 12.
Right.
He started having kids with them when he was 13.
So the reason I asked you this question about how you got into the FBI, the fact that you had gone to camp and you were molested by this can we call him a monster?
No, he was a camp director.
But
why
can't we call him a monster?
Because then what you're doing is you're teaching kids. You only have to worry about monsters, not the guy who you look up to, the guy who your parents say, listen to him, he's the director, not the guy who is your basketball coach, who you want to impress on the basketball court. The kids won't worry about them because they're looking for monsters. They're over here when the guy's right there.
God, profiler, because that's exactly what I was trying to get you to say.
Really? You're amazing.
Yes. I mean, I have a game plan when I go into this. Like, you know what? Watch this.
I should just leave.
Even need you. Watch this. I can get you. Watch this. Ready?
More notes? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Listen. And we got one more thing and then we'll wrap this. No. I wanted you to go into your tirade, your monster talking point. I wanted you to amp it up more than the way you scolded that Fox News anchor, okay? Because I know if I say to Jim Clemente, if I want you to say this phrase, all I have to say is, Jim Clemente, what is it, nature or is it nurture?
No, it's
and
not.
Jim Clemente's going to say, genetics loads a gun, personality and psychology aim it, and it's your experience that pulls the trigger. See, I got you, Jim. I got you. You've been interrogated.
You could have done this without me.
I'm going to give Jim my fake address, and I'm going to see if he notices when he walks into the door.
I just want to know if when I go to see you the next time at the Improv or at the Laugh Factory or somewhere else, whether you're going to say that same line. I think you'd be amazing at it. Yeah. You know what? People talk about nature versus nurture. You know what it really is?
Yeah. I asked you this question not because I wanted you to relive the pain.
No, it's not.
Of that.
And believe me, I have realized that my being able to talk about it has helped so many people. And I wrote 3 episodes of Criminal Minds about it.
Yeah.
Shamar Moore played me, my character, having gotten molested as a kid and going back and getting the guy. He got more shit about it at first. His friends were, you know, saying, you got molested, you know. Then he said people started coming out of the woodwork across the country, around the world, thanking him for doing that because he's a hero. And he could be a hero, an FBI profiler, and having been molested. And he told all of them, dude, I'm just playing it on TV. Jim lived it.
Yeah.
This happened. And he said, and when he left the show, he said, he took me aside and said, I have to tell you, I've done TV for 25 years or 30 years. He said, the best 3 episodes I ever played, the best acting I've ever done is those 3 episodes.
Mm.
Thank you for doing it for me. And it's amazing, but if you talk about it, because when I was a kid, nobody talked about it.
That's what I want to ask you.
I didn't know anything about it.
That's what I want to ask you.
Completely blindsided by it.
That's what I want to ask you.
You don't have to.
This is why I brought it up.
Of course you did, because I'm being manipulated by you to say
things. Yes, you are.
It's clear.
Listen, I'll be honest. I am manipulating you. I had a game plan going into this, as I always do.
It's very clear.
I do my research, and I'm connecting things, and I'm firing 200 thoughts subconsciously, perhaps half a second.
200 billion.
I have whatever you described, the liquid, I have that going on. the kelps or whatever, the weight. Seriously.
Okay.
Because there's an ignorance out there. I want you to educate people. Okay. Why do victims of sexual assault...
I'll talk about it. Okay. Because in our society, we think that by keeping children, we'll talk about children first, by keeping them safe, what that means is keeping them naive, right? But if you lived on a dangerous road, cars flying into walls, right, you know, in front of your house, right?
Whoa, could imagine.
It's hard to imagine. Yeah. But you have kids, right? And they're getting 2, 3, 4 years old. Would you protect them by not telling them that the road is dangerous? Or would you walk them to the edge of the road and say, look, see these cars going by real fast? They can hurt you really bad. So when we come to the edge of the road, whether we're playing ball or where we have to walk down the street or where we're going to school, we hold your hand and we look both ways and we wait till it's clear and then we go across. We walk with them until they can do it safely on their own. But with sex and sex crimes, we think by not talking to them about it, we're protecting them. You're not. Parents have to have age-appropriate discussions with children from the day they're born, while they're still in the womb. I don't care, but the earlier you do it, the easier it is for the adult. You have to become about it.
What are you supposed to tell the kids? You have to. Someone touches you here.
No, you should talk about the body parts in whatever clinical way you want to describe them. They should know about all their body parts, because if they don't know the name of that particular body part because nobody talks about it in our home, or if it's seen as dirty in our home, then if something happens to them related to that body part, they think it's bad for them to say it. I didn't have the words to tell my parents. I was so afraid that if I said something, I'd get in trouble for saying the words.
Really?
We didn't talk about sex in my family.
Yeah.
Nobody did. Yeah. Not a word about it. So I knew it was wrong. There's so many nonverbals that adults do.
What about going to somebody else in the camp? What about...
I went to the priest in my high school. He told me, say 10 Hail Fathers, 10 Hail Marys, and never speak of this again. He was molesting boys. He's the one that sent me to the camp.
Wow.
Yeah, he got kicked out of the priesthood later. But there's so many nonverbals. Like, if sex, the topic, comes up on the radio, on the TV, on the internet, parents turn it off. But if you're talking about it between adults and a kid enters, you shush them away. We have to find ways to educate kids about it so they're not looking for other sources of information, because sex offenders want to educate your kids about sex.
Right. How old were you?
I was 15.
You were 15 at the time?
Yes.
And you knew it was wrong, right? You knew what was
happening. I knew, yes. I mean, I was shaking. I was like, what's he doing? Why is he doing this to me? I thought he was like my mentor. I thought he was like the guy I looked up to. You know, he was showing, he used all the big threes for adolescent boys: drinking, driving, and dirty pictures. That was how he groomed me, right?
Dirty pictures of women?
Yeah, it started that way, but then he started putting in people, you know, same-sex people, adults and kids.
Did he ever show you any of the Polaroids he had taken of other boys?
No. I never knew at the time that there were other victims.
Can you trust your memory of these experiences?
You know, some people describe it as, you know, they have to recall their memories or whatever. People don't want to think about it, but I never unknew that I had been molested. I mean, it was on the forefront of my mind for 10 years before I went to the FBI. I mean, I knew it. I mean, I broke up with my girlfriend because I thought it would be printed on my forehead that I was damaged goods. I felt guilty and shame, all this terrible stuff that just is foisted on you because you only heard that sex is bad. Certainly, you're not supposed to be engaging in sexual activity with some guy, and a guy that's part of the church and you look up to and he's your coach. You know, all these things that you're like, oh my God, what the fuck? It just totally upends everything you expect and blindsides you. And then you feel guilty about it. It's your fault. Kids internalize stuff, right? So anyway, I just closed down And, you know, one of the most horrible things about it was that, you know, I pushed myself away from my mother. I pushed my mother away. She said, Jimmy, you used to always be such a happy kid. And I was a happy kid before that. And I wasn't after that. And so she died of cancer. And then he says, I'm sorry to hear about your mother dying. Oh my God, that's what got me inflamed. That's why I called the FBI. That's why I said, you got to come and wire me up, because that got me over the hump of, this guy's not getting away with this. He's the reason why. I never resolved this with my mother before she died, because I couldn't say the words still, even as an adult.
It infuriates me. I've talked to a few people that have been victims that never came forward, including, you know, there are, you know, people in my business that have been accused. I'd love to get your opinion off the air, because I never know what to believe or not believe. Mm-hmm. These are people that I work with, people that are, you know, I have their numbers on my phone, you know, but I know victims, and I believe the victim. And it drives me nuts when people say, well, why don't they come forward? Why didn't they come forward? I was watching a Netflix documentary the other day. I think it was Alabama. I don't know if you're familiar with this case. It was Alabama versus, she had a very generic name. I'm trying to find it in my notes if you're here. It was a stand your ground case. And she shot a guy, molested her. She invited a guy into her house that was having hard times to sleep on her couch. And she let this person sleep on the couch. And then he started choking her out of the blue and raped her. And she called her brother and she said, could you come pick me up, this guy? I wish I could find it. Something versus, got so many notes. She called her brother and she said, could you come pick me up? I want to get some cigarettes. And the guy was still in the house. And the guy came out with her and in the car. And the brother thought he was just taking her to get cigarettes. She goes to the gas station, convenient place. And she writes on a piece of paper, this guy raped me. Handed it to her. And if I end up dead, this guy probably killed me. Brittany Smith, state of Alabama versus Brittany Smith. It's on Netflix. It's a stand your ground case. And when her brother came back, she told him, the brother left and the convenience mart person called their mother, told the brother. The brother goes back to confront this guy and says, you got to get out of the house. If you don't get out of the house, I'm going to kill you. Brought a gun. The guy didn't get it. He put the gun on the counter for some reason. I don't know much about guns, but I would still hold it. He starts choking the brother out. She pulls the gun, shoots him twice. Okay. Calls 911.
And they prosecuted her?
She's in jail right now.
Are you?
She's in jail right now because staying your ground works for men, does not work for women. And they said you weren't being strangled at the time, but here's...
But she was protecting somebody else's life. Why does that not count?
I don't know. Here's the
thing. That's self-defense.
She calls 911. You know this better than I do. She calls 911 and says, the 911 operator says, has this guy... First of all, it's scary enough calling 911 because it's not consistent. Sometimes you call and they say, 911, where's the emergency? Sometimes it's 911,
what's your emergency?
Right, so I would panic anyway. So, you go, 911, what's your emergency? I'm like, I'm in my house. I didn't say where. I said, what? What's the emergency? So, and you know it's being recorded, okay? Right. She said, did this man rape you? And she said, no. Okay, the prosecutor never believed that she was raped.
Oh, but see, this is the thing.
That's
anybody who works in the field of sexual assault knows that disclosure only happens in a small percentage of cases. Immediate disclosure only a minute number of cases. In the studies that they've done in the U.S. and Canada, only 20% of the women who went to rape trauma treatment centers reported to law enforcement. That's 80%.
20% reported.
Yes.
Right.
80% didn't. And those are the ones who went for treatment. How many more women don't even go for treatment?
Well, in the case like this, like, listen, you were very fortunate. You went to law school. You had opportunities to meet with the FBI. Most victims don't.
I know.
I mean, a lot of victims go,
I want to help. That's the first case we should do.
Let's do it.
Let's get her out. That's ridiculous.
Right.
She is in jail?
She
got convicted or she's pending trial?
She got convicted. There might be more to it.
Okay.
I don't think there's more to that, but she got convicted. She's in jail. No, I'll tell you what happened. She's poor. When you're indigent, you don't have access to good lawyers.
Right.
You get an appointed lawyer who doesn't give a crap about your life.
Well, he may have 300 or 400 cases
just
to do.
Just wants to get it off the docket.
Right.
and the state offered her a plea deal. Now, tell me if this isn't weird. First-degree murder would be 5 years, and manslaughter would be 15 years. For some reason, manslaughter was lesser murder, first-degree. They wanted to get her on first-degree murder for some reason. The system.
Well, but first-degree murder is... First-degree murder should be... It's premeditated murder. It's
right.
It should be the longer sentence.
She confessed to that.
She confessed to that.
And it was a shorter sentence than manslaughter. That's what I'm saying.
How is that possible?
Let's go to Alabama. Let's go to Idaho. Listen, where's my assistant? Do they have nonstop from Idaho to Alabama flights? How many connections do we have to make?
Probably 45. Jim, we'll drive. We'll drive.
Jim, we've gone over 2 hours. I think that. But I do feel like this is a really important part. Settle down. We have one more thing to talk about.
No.
You're not running out.
What time is my thing?
It doesn't matter. Cancel the other thing. We're having too much fun.
All right, no. Just let me look, please.
Okay, you look. I'll talk. Episode 66 of What's Wrong with Orny Adams. On a serious note, I don't usually go this long, but I really feel like this is an important discussion we're having. And I didn't even get to... I wanted to talk about, can we trust everybody, like government agencies, the CIA, and that OSB case with the mole inside, with the guy that sold to WikiLeaks that vault number 7 and vault number 8. We didn't even get into that, but let's end...
That's the next time.
End on something interesting.
Oh, because everything else we've been talking about has been boring?
Let's try and make this.
Am I reading between the lines? Go ahead. Tell me what's interesting.
I'm breaking you down right now so you work harder to be more entertaining.
Okay,
the closing segment. Very manipulative. Jim, you're an amazing guest. Nah. I would say this, that this is as close of an episode to what I theorized this podcast would be.
Cool.
And the only criticisms I have of myself is that sometimes I was a little bit too tense up here and leaning in. But for the most part, this was a conversation that unraveled in a way that I never thought would have. You were more open. You were more animated. You've been pretty boring
been
on other podcasts.
Yes, of course.
Finally, the real you.
I know, right. That's why to be honest, I asked you, can I be myself when I walked in here, right? And you said, okay.
I said, don't wear that stupid FBI pin. Is that an FBI pin?
It is a FBI badge.
In every interview.
Stupid, yes.
No, it's not stupid.
I worked really hard for that, but thank you. Stupid is, I guess, stupid, it's better than really stupid or horrifically bad, so I'm only at stupid.
That's my friend Flo Groberg, Florent, won the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Wow.
He was fighting in the Middle East. I think it was Iran, maybe Iraq, I'm sorry. And he was protecting some soldiers, and he saw a suicide bomber walking over a bridge towards, I hope I'm telling this story correctly, and he jumped on the suicide bomber and detonated the vest, and he lived. And Obama gave him the Congressional Medal of Honor.
As he should have.
Yeah. I mean, this guy's an amazing man. I'd love to get him on this podcast. But he has a Congressional Medal of Honor ring. Mm. And he took it off and he put it on my fat finger and it wouldn't come off. And he started yanking.
I'm surprised you still have the finger.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He almost just sliced it off and took. But that's what I thought of. But that brings a really interesting topic to bring up quickly.
Okay,
is that it's really important to understand that when a comedian or me says that stupid FBI pin, that we're speaking in hyperbole.
Oh, sure,
that we're
sure.
just being funny. I have such respect for the FBI and the CIA, and in fact, just as many criminals love me as police officers, or law enforcement loves me for some reason.
Well, I love you, man. You're great.
And then these organized criminals, they find me in these cities and they love me. And I think you guys all have the same mind. I think you're very similar minds.
Well, it takes one to know one, right?
That's what I think.
Right.
What do FBI agents need to read the Miranda rights?
Oh, if you're arresting someone, sure.
So if you arrest somebody...
It's only for custodial interrogation. It's not just for arrest. So
that means if the person's in custody in a room.
If you're keeping the person and you're interrogating them, you don't have to read Miranda rights if you're just arresting someone. If you're, let's say, you put the handcuffs on and you're driving them to the precinct or the FBI building.
Okay.
It's only when you're interrogating them that you need to do it. Now, people in an overabundance of caution might read the Miranda rights early on, but you don't have to do it until you're interrogating somebody.
So you have the same parameters as...
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And
what do you know about the history? Like Miranda...
Of Miranda?
Right.
Well, I'll tell you this much. It only protects the wealthy and the lawyered, because indigent people generally don't trust the law, and a lawyer is part of the law to them.
But isn't...
So
the,
they don't ask for a lawyer.
Isn't the police officer part of the law? Can I...
Yes, that's why they don't trust the police
but
officer.
But then why do they talk to them?
Well,
they get conned into it?
Because, well, some of it. I mean, because police officers are allowed to be manipulative. They're kind of like comedians.
They're allowed to... How dare you, Jim Clemente! How dare you!
Let's be honest. We're a lot alike. Both wearing black.
I mean, I have
that's
to,
because
I'm 10 pounds overweight. Well, you don't have to. Why don't you
to.
Wear colors?
I don't wear colors.
Can I make a suggestion to the
what?
FBI?
Sure.
And seriously, and police everywhere.
What?
Zhuzh up the interrogation room a little bit. I mean, it really...
You don't want any distractions.
I would take them for a walk outside.
Right.
I'd let them play video games. I'd make them feel really comfortable so that they would open up. That's
okay.
What I would do.
All right, but there's issues with that. You know, there are. But the point is that we do actually construct and decorate our interrogation rooms very specifically.
Can I make another suggestion?
You can suggest all you want, sure.
HD recording. Let's go 4K. Why
oh,
is
man.
The camera setup so shitty?
Money. People are defunding police. They're not giving them new camera equipment. They're not giving
but
them
even before defund police, it looks like a 7-Eleven security camera over there
well,
in the
that's
corner.
That's why a lot of crimes are unsolved, is because they have no money.
In 1966, the Supreme Court, Arizona versus Miranda,
yes,
said that police must read, and they always have to read it. You have the right to remain silent.
So they get it exactly right.
Well, it kind of makes me concerned that the police can't memorize that card when we all know it when we watch these
because
shows.
You have to have them sign it, that they have read it and understand it. They've heard, read it, and understood it.
Yeah, and probably in their native language, too.
Yes.
It has to be read. 1966. 1962, this guy Miranda, Ernesto Miranda, kidnapped and raped. Did he murder? I think he...
I don't think he was a murderer, but...
Yeah, I looked at his mugshot right there, Jim. I don't know if this is...
profiled him?
Yeah, I convicted him in my mind based on the... That's just why you don't want to have me on a jury. I convict just based on... I don't believe in circumstantial evidence.
What?
I don't... I got thrown off of a jury, I'll tell you sometime, for fighting...
I would throw you off my jury, that's
yeah, yeah.
for sure.
Fighting with the this lawyer, I'll tell you the story, it's so funny, presented this whole circumstantial case, and I broke it down, okay? This is to get on during the jury pool, and I broke it down, and I just saw the judge going, this guy's right. Look at this piece of shit. It's just schooling this lawyer. And so I was juror number one. They go, juror number one, you're dismissed. And I'm walking out of the court, and, you know, I don't know.
You should do a class.
Yeah.
You should teach people how to get a...
Yeah.
Millions of people will do that. You should do a master class.
I should.
How do you get a... you should.
The judge...
You'll
the,
make millions.
The judge yelled. Do you have any shows coming up? And they don't know, you know, because I go under my legal name, you know.
Yeah.
So, but...
And so he didn't know you were...
They must have Googled. I think yeah. I mean,
okay.
I was a standout. Why?
Well, you should try me when I get in there.
Yeah.
The jury duty. It's kind of funny because I always try to minimize.
Yeah.
You know, I have to tell the truth on the forms and stuff. But, you know, they ask me what my profession is.
Yeah.
And I'm a writer.
Yeah.
That's what I do right now. I write and produce.
So,
But I'm also a retired FBI agent. But unless they ask me what my prior career was,
yeah.
I don't tell them yet.
Right.
But then usually, at some point, they say, so, you're a writer. What do you write about? And I said, oh, I write about what I used to do for a living.
Right.
What's that? I was an FBI profiler.
yeah, gone.
I usually get that.
Gone.
Yeah, there's just like no hesitation. I said that was after I was a prosecutor in New
right.
York City. And then, you know, I'm guaranteed to never get on a jury. But unfortunately, I still have to go there and sit there a lot of times until they call me into the box.
Yeah, yeah. Jim, I just had a genius thought because you're like a podcaster. I'm at 2 hours, 15 minutes. What if I break this?
You should break it into several episodes.
Two.
All right, two or three.
If I do two... But do I need to, like, record something right now? Like,
no, we
hey,
can.
Okay,
yeah.
What do we record?
Well,
but let me finish with Miranda.
Okay. All right, and then I have to go.
You
got to
go.
I literally have...
Okay, so you go. How do we say this? How do we break it up?
So we just say, Jim. You just say, Jim, this is so freaking amazing. We can't squeeze this
we
into
one. We just did that, didn't we?
I know, but just say, that, you know, can you come back next week?
No, they'll know it's the same lighting and everything.
It doesn't matter. We'll wear the same clothes. I only have one set of clothes that I go on podcast for.
I'm going to break it up. It'll be two episodes.
Yeah.
You have to do that. That's the only way.
Yeah, it's too long. People are going to be bored.
We'll be right back with part two. No, next week.
Next week, part two.
Maybe. With Jim Clemente.
Yes. Maybe I'll wear my stupid. Was it stupid?
Oh, FBI. Here we go. Now the FBI is going to come after me.
No, you know how you and your routine. You always refer back to things. That's all I was doing. I was trying to refer back.
I get a call back to me getting canceled by the FBI.
There you go.
Yeah, now I'm going to get questioned. Now I'll be a suspect. What do you know, Miranda?
The helicopters are coming.
Yeah.
What do I know about it? All I can tell you is several times I was asked to speak to a criminal law class at Georgetown Law School because of the professor asked me. And each time I did, I talked about Miranda. And each time I did, at the end of the year, now this is pretty early in the school year when you're in law school, right? At the end of the year, she always asks on their final to discuss a topic that they learned about and what they would do about it. And every single time, 90% of the people in the class said, I would do away with Miranda and substitute it with something else because that's what I suggested.
Huh.
Because Miranda only protects people who trust lawyers. It doesn't protect people who are indigent. Like Miranda was, they never ask for a lawyer because they know that lawyers are part of the game and they're outsiders and they don't want to look like they're guilty. So what you're doing is automatically putting them in a worse position because you told them they can have a lawyer, but at the same time.
Well, look at that, the battery. Uh-oh, the battery.
See, we ran it. Everything's dying.
Keep going. Maybe this one. Yours is still on.
Yeah, because you told them that they can have a lawyer,
right?
But they know that if you ask for one, that the cops themselves are going to think you're guilty, and you think you could still talk your way out of it.
But this is what I wanted to talk about. Miranda. Miranda was convicted, then it was overturned because they said that you have to read these rights.
Well, they created the rights for.
Yeah. So then they threw out his confession, convicted him again. Mm-hmm. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
Okay, he gets out of jail. Do you know this story?
Yeah.
He was killed by a guy who was read the Miranda rights, didn't speak, and
didn't get convicted, and he was out on the street.
So Miranda saved this guy's life, basically. Like,
well,
do you understand?
Like, it's sort of the opposite of my story about cancer, right?
Yeah,
Miranda warnings. Freaking killed Miranda.
But Miranda warnings didn't even save Miranda.
He
got convicted again. Then a guy kills him. He gets killed
because the other guy got out because of Miranda warnings.
This would be like, let's use cancer. This would be like if you found the cure for cancer, then you died from cancer. But before you died from cancer, a guy had an affair with your wife who also had cancer. I guess they met in the cancer ward, right? And he got the treatment that you invented and he didn't die.
It's terrible.
It's terrible.
It's terrible, but...
I thought I was going to stump you.
Let me just tell you something.
Yeah.
What I love about this is that I know next time I see you, this is going to be in your act.
I don't know.
It's got to be. Come on, this is sophisticated. Oh, come on.
I wanted to stump you. Jim Clemente.
I went to law school.
Do people know the history? Oh, the music's playing. Do people know the history of Miranda? Do they teach you that he got stabbed in a bar over $2?
Well, they tell you the story, and you have to go and read. That's your job as a law school student. You have to read.
No, I know. I have a lot of friends that went to law school. I don't think they read anything.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Well,
to be honest, they were in California.
Yeah.
Not
Jim
New York.
Clemente, I want to thank you.
I've had so much fun.
You're amazing. I've never had a camera go out.
I know.
Thank God I got a backup here. But this will be editing hell for me. You know, I edit this myself.
You're amazing.
Jim Clemente, FBI profiler, former prosecutor, state, right?
City, New York City prosecutor.
He's got
and writer-producer.
Writer-producer, host of Real Crime.
Real Crime Profile, Best Case, Worst Case, which is a podcast that I want to have you on.
Why can't I do both?
Well, Real Crime Profile, excuse me.
Which one's got me more listeners?
The problem with Real Crime Profile is that the topics that we talk about, are very serious.
Yeah, I can be serious. Yeah. You saw this.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very worried about that. It's possible. I'll see if they'll want to get you on for a lighter side kind of thing.
But I love it.
Best case, worst case, Francie Hakes, who's my co-host on that, she's a former federal and state prosecutor, and we have the kind of this, you know, brother-sister, you know, kind of pick on each other all the time. And so it would be great to have somebody, another male on my side.
Great. I'm down.
All right, great.
I'm down. Episode 66, What's Wrong with Oney Adams? My guest, Jim Clemente. I want to thank you, the listeners. I want to thank Ernesto Hurtado for processing this. If you want to email me, if you have any questions about this podcast or anything, it's whatswrong@oneyadams.com. You can go to teamwhatswrong.com for all the links. The video will be up on Patreon for about a week. Actually, this one I might just put out right on YouTube. The older episodes on YouTube and the audio is everywhere. Jim Clemente. You're amazing.
Lots of fun,
Thank you for your time. And you've got to run out of here and do your popular podcast. Thank you so much.
Care,
I appreciate it.
Yep.
We'll walk you out.
All right.
I've never had a camera. You remembered. I've never had a camera go down.
Well, you know, I've been here for a very long time.
Your battery lasted longer than mine.